Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again from Washington. It's time to listen and learn as we work together to improve your American English skills. Today, we go back into the classroom with Kelly Jean Kelly and Mario Ritter. They will serve as our teachers today as we talk about how we compare things in English. Do we say that one thing is good, but something else is gooder? No, that's wrong. Are you confused? Well, let's turn to the experts. Ms. Kelly, you get the first word.
Adjectives describe and add information about the people or things we see every day. Sometimes, though, we want to know how two things compare to one another. Let's start with something light. In 1994, actors Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels made a comic film called Dumb and Dumber. Audiences saw the characters do increasingly dumb things for laughs. Here, the adjective form is dumb, and the comparative form is dumber. By adding er to the adjective, you show the difference between two things, that one action or person is dumber than another. This works for adjectives that have one or two syllables, such as nice or pretty.
But when a word has three or more syllables, you cannot use the er suffix to make a comparison. You cannot say a person or object is beautifuler than another. Instead, you say they are more beautiful. There is a rule you can remember to help with comparatives. If a word has more than two syllables, you do not use the suffix er. Instead, you use the adjective more before the adjective of comparison. For example, the test this week was more difficult than the one last week. Other comparatives, especially in advertising, may not directly mention which two nouns are being compared. The retail giant Walmart has an advertisement that simply says, "Live better." Live better than whom? So if a laundry detergent advertisement claims to make colors brighter, you may ask, "Brighter than what?" When the nouns that are being compared are not specifically stated, you can call it an empty comparison. Listen for the comparative in this song by Steve Winwood.
Watch out for irregular forms of comparatives. There are some common one-syllable adjectives that can be confusing. The adjective far is an example. It seems logical that the comparative of far would be farer, but the comparative of far is farther. My house is farther from work than yours. Another comparative form of far is further, as in, her career has progressed further than his. Traditionally, farther refers to a distance that can be measured. Further refers to a distance that cannot be measured. Nowadays, many people use farther and further interchangeably. This confusing exception has to do with spelling and pronunciation changes in English during the Middle Ages.
Comparatives like these do not tell us too much about the degree of comparison. So we can always compare things that are similar as long as they are a little different. For example, the planet Saturn is big, more than 116,000 kilometers across. But the planet Jupiter is bigger. On the other end of the scale, an ant, a very small insect, is longer than a mite. What if we are trying to make a specific comparison between many things? Then we use the superlative. The superlative describes the highest degree of something. The comparative of good is better. The superlative form is best. Listen to singer Tina Turner use the superlative in her hit song, The Best.
You're simply the best. Better than all the rest. Better than anyone. Anyone I've ever met.
On the other end, the comparative of bad is worse, and the superlative is worst. Little becomes less, and then there is least, comparatively speaking. You have to pay attention with comparative adjectives, but adding est to regular adjectives gives you the superlative form. However, as with the comparative form, if the adjective has more than two syllables, use the most to form the superlative. You can hear the superlative with the most, followed by a three-syllable adjective, in this song by Prince.
Could you be the most beautiful girl in the world?
Many Americans celebrate the Halloween holiday on the last day of October. Halloween is associated with the spirits of the dead and all things frightening and terrifying. Young people wear scary costumes. The time of year can be termed spooky. When comparing, we could say one costume is spookier than another. But the most frightening of all is the spookiest.
Rounding out our survey, let's look ahead to the end of the year and the Christmas holiday. Some might say it is the best time of the year, whether for its religious significance or the spirit of giving during that holiday season. Some might say it is the most wonderful time of the year.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Mario Ritter.
Telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. A United Nations organization is working to help developing countries become active partners in the world economy. The UN Conference on Trade and Development says recent financial unrest shows the need for new thinking about international trade and development. The conference, also known as UNCTAD, notes financial problems like the debt crisis in Greece, growing debt levels in other nations, and stock market troubles in Asia. In a new report, UNCTAD is calling for reform of the International Monetary Fund to better meet the needs of developing countries. It also calls on nations to provide greater support for the IMF and development banks. The report says countries should be able to pay for goods and services in their own currencies without having to use money from a third country. And pointing to the issue of debt, UNCTAD has called on international lenders to find better ways to restructure debt payments. The report adds that many signs show the world has recovered in many ways from the financial crisis of 2007 and 2008. Employment is recovering, although not as quickly as needed. And leading measures of stock prices have recovered to their levels before 2008. However, economic growth is slowing in both developed and developing countries. UNCTAD also points to debt as a continuing problem. It estimates that $57 trillion have been added to the world's debt since 2007. A major idea in the UNCTAD report is its call for the development of a better world financial system with a more secure base. Steve McFeely oversees development statistics and information for the organization. He spoke to reporters in Bangkok Monday.
The image on the front of the report this year is a house of cards, and that's really the key message that we want to convey, is how to ensure that we're not building a house of cards for an international monetary and financial system for the future, but to look at ways of maybe putting in more secure foundations that will have a more profound and lasting effect for everyone's benefit.
In its report, UNCTAD criticizes major credit rating agencies such as Fitch, Moody's, and Standard & Poor's for failing to predict financial crises. Mr. McFeely says the agencies should either improve their models or be removed from the system. He suggests they might be replaced by public international groups. UNCTAD itself has been criticized for tending to support government measures to support economies in crisis. This has been in opposition to the position put forward by many of the world's financial institutions. They often support giving more power to private businesses and expanding trade and markets. And that's the Economics Report. I'm Mario Ritter.
from VOA Learning English. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, our weekly program of American history for people learning American English. I'm Steve Ember. The Mexican-American War officially ended in 1848. Mexico agreed to give California and New Mexico to the United States. And Mexico would recognize the Rio Grande River as the southern border of Texas. Thus, President James K. Polk had succeeded in expanding the United States. He had added Oregon, California, Texas, and New Mexico to the country. Now the country faced the problem of what to do with slavery in the new territories.
As soon as it became clear in the American consciousness that Polk's aim in the Mexican War was to gain southwestern territory, California and what's now the American Southwest, then the slavery question becomes very, very salient in a powerful way that it had been kind of sort of kept under wraps for 20, 25 years.
Robert Merry is an historian and the author of a book about James K. Polk.
So we went through 10 years of kind of political hell in America as we struggled with that issue, which could only be settled through force of arms.
Southerners argued that they had the right to bring slaves into California and New Mexico. Northerners opposed any further spread of slavery, but the real question was a legal one. Did Congress have the power to control or ban slavery in the territories? While Congress debated the issue, the country moved quickly into the presidential campaign of 1848. President Polk was old, tired, and in poor health. He said he would keep his promise to serve only one term. Polk felt that he had done his duty. During the first days of his administration, he listed the goals of his presidency. First, he wanted to reduce the tax on imports. Second, he wished to establish an independent treasury, which the Whigs had voted out. Third, he hoped to settle the Oregon border dispute with Britain. And fourth, he wanted to make California part of the United States. Less than 4 years later, he had succeeded with each item on his list. The United States and Britain agreed on a compromise in the Oregon dispute. In 1846, Polk was able to establish the independent treasury again, where the government could keep its own funds. No longer would government money be kept in private banks. That same year, Polk was able to get Congress to approve a bill that greatly reduced the taxes on imports. And the peace treaty with Mexico gave the United States not only California, but also New Mexico. So the president believed he had served his country well. Polk, however, had not served his party well. He was not a good politician. He failed to unite competing groups within the Democratic Party. What was worse, he let them move even farther apart. There seemed to be no strong Democratic candidate who could unite the party. At one extreme were the supporters of former President Martin Van Buren, New York Democrats opposed to slavery. They were called barn burners. They got this name from their opponents who claimed that they were willing to burn down the entire barn to remove pro-slavery rants. At the party's other extreme were the Democrats of the South, led by John C. Calhoun of South Carolina. In every state, the Democrats were divided between those who supported the Polk administration and those who opposed it. Democratic candidates met in Baltimore in May of 1848 to choose their candidate for president. On the fourth vote, the delegates chose Senator Lewis Cass of Michigan as the party's presidential candidate. Cass was 66 years old. He was considered a moderate Democrat. He was a Northerner who did not oppose slavery. On the question of slavery in the new territories, Cass believed that the people living in those areas should make the decision. The barn burner Democrats of New York refused to accept Cass as their candidate. They walked out of the Baltimore Convention. Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky expected to be the presidential candidate of the Whig Party. The Whigs had nominated Clay as their candidate in three earlier elections, but Clay lost all three times. In 1848, older members of the party still supported him, but young Whigs felt a new candidate was needed. Some party leaders remembered how William Henry Harrison had won the presidency for the Whigs in 1840 by campaigning as a military hero. The country now had a new military hero, Old Zach, General Zachary Taylor. He and his men never lost a battle in the Mexican War. Several times, General Taylor defeated Mexican forces much larger than his. Taylor was 63 years old. He had almost no formal education. He had spent almost 40 years in the West as an Indian fighter and commander of small army bases. Some politicians did not believe Taylor had the ability to be president, but his supporters put great energy into their campaign. They tried to sell the idea that the general was the only man who could defeat the candidate of the Democratic Party. Finally, Taylor won the Whig Party's nomination. Many Americans did not like either presidential candidate because of the candidate's policies on slavery. Lewis Cass saw nothing wrong with slavery if that was what the people wanted. And Zachary Taylor was a slave owner. So a group of men in Ohio decided to form a new political party. They called it the Free Soil Party, because they believed in free land for free settlers. They wanted no further spread of slavery. The Free Soil leaders proposed a convention of all who supported their ideas. 10,000 people went to the convention in Buffalo, New York. For 2 days, the delegates debated the slavery issue and discussed their choice of a candidate for president. They also worked on a platform, a statement of their party's purpose. The platform declared that slavery was an institution of the states, not the nation. It said Congress had no right to help spread slavery by permitting it in the new Western territories. The platform declared that the issue should be faced with firmness. No more slave states. No more slave territory. No more compromises with slavery anywhere. Convention delegates then voted on candidates. They chose former President Martin Van Buren as the party's candidate. The people of the nation voted on November 7, 1848. It was the first time a presidential election was held on the same day in all parts of the country. Zachary Taylor won both the popular and electoral votes. He became the 12th president of the United States. Congress met a few weeks after the election, long before Taylor took office. It faced serious problems. Territorial governments were needed for the areas won in the war against Mexico. California especially needed help. Gold had been discovered in California. Thousands of people were moving there. A government was needed to protect the lives and property of the new population. Then there was the question of laws forcing northern states to return escaped slaves to their owners. The laws were not always obeyed. Southerners wanted a new law that would be easier to enforce. Congress found it difficult to act on these problems. The House of Representatives was controlled by members of the Free Soil Party, which opposed slavery. The Senate was controlled by Southerners who supported slavery. The two sides found it almost impossible to agree on anything. Early in January 1849, a congressman proposed a bill to first limit and then end slavery in the District of Columbia. Opposition to the bill was strong. It was amended. The new bill would simply close all places in the District of Columbia where slaves were bought and sold. Southern congressmen disliked the bill, even as amended. They organized a committee representing every one of the southern states. Senator John C. Calhoun said the committee should write a declaration explaining the position of the South. The committee agreed, and Calhoun wrote most of the declaration himself. The Southern Declaration accused the North of many aggressions. The South, it said, faced many dangers. Soon there would be enough free states to control both the House and the Senate. And then the Constitution would be changed and all slaves would be freed. And this, said the Southern Declaration, would lead to bitter hostility and war between North and South. The Declaration called on the people of the South to unite and be firm in their opposition to the North. With this new firmness, Southern lawmakers fought to make slavery legal in the new territories. They effectively blocked proposals for territorial governments in California and New Mexico. Congress ended its term on March 4th, 1849, without any progress. Zachary Taylor was sworn in as president that same day. Americans hoped that the new president would be able to bring the North and South together again. But Taylor really had no policy. He could not support a bill to keep slavery out of the territories. That might start a quick revolt among the southern states. He could not support a bill to let slavery spread into the territories. That would make the North rise in anger. Taylor tried to be neutral. He hoped the problem of slavery would solve itself. But the problem would not solve itself. The growing division between North and South will be our story next week. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History from VOA Learning English.